reminder that you can help save Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's home in Hindhead, Surrey, by supporting the Undershaw Preservation Trust. It was at Undershaw that he wrote The Hound of the Baskervilles and The Return of Sherlock Holmes, and entertained many notable people, including Bram Stoker, the author of Dracula, J.M. Barrie, the creator of Peter Pan, and the young Virginia Woolf. Today, Undershaw stands sorrowfully empty, neglected, and vandalized. Waverly Borough Council have granted the owners planning permission to carve up the literary historic house into three flats, with five more homes built on its side. Modern townhouses, or maintained as the single dwelling that Conan Doyle designed and had built. The Undershaw Preservation Trust is vigorously working towards the latter, and you can help by visiting www.saveundershaw.com, as well as following them on Twitter and joining their Facebook campaign. Thank you. The Baker Street Babes would like to thank their sponsor, the Baker Street Journal, the publication of the Baker Street Irregulars. Wow, lots of Baker Street there. Anywho, started in 1946, the Baker Street Journal produces four issues a year in the spring, summer, autumn, and winter, plus a year-end Christmas annual. As founder of the Baker Street Irregulars, Christopher Morley said, "Never has so much been written by so many for so few." It publishes essays and scholarship on the characters and stories from the perspective that they are history, not fiction. And let's be all honest, Sherlock Holmes and Dr. John Watson are definitely real. But it is also more than that. It publishes reviews, covers pop culture manifestations between film, radio, and TV, there's plenty to talk about, and the Baker Street Irregulars. And you don't need to be a member of the Baker Street Irregulars to either subscribe to the periodical or even contribute your own article. For more information, go to www.bakerstreetjournal.com. Thank you very much.
Oh, they call us the Irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street babes always leave the rest of them behind. Oh, so when Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. Quotidian world has got you crying, won't you two one mine?
Welcome to the Baker Street Babes podcast, episode number 26. I know you're expecting Amanda Abington, but she's quite busy. But instead, we have another fabulous Sherlock lady here, the always delightful, very domineering Lara Pulver.
Babies!
AKA the fabulous lady who played Irene Adler in BBC Sherlock, which is airing right now. Not at this moment, maybe at this moment, depends on when you're listening. It's airing on PBS.
Stream it from PBS if you missed it.
Yes.
Do what's proper.
Our good friends at PBS Masterpiece, Scandal Belgravia, aired last Sunday. You get Hounds next, be very excited.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to chat with Lara about Irene and, you know, feminism and word games and all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah, and how fabulous it is to win Alexander McQueen and Louboutins at the same damn time.
Same time. Ah!
So let's be real here. That is cray-cray!
I think everyone coveted her wardrobe. It was just freaking beautiful. Oh my god.
The black dress that she wears in the airplane scene and then the scene with Mycroft, it's actually made of black silk cellophane organza. That's why it's so reflective.
Is it like plastic?
It's like a combination of silk and a plastic sort of woven into it. So the cellophane aspect is I don't understand it, but that's why it looks stupid cool.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think I really do love the white dress. I also love the green kimono-y. It's not kimono.
That's vintage.
It's beautiful.
French vintage. God. Ye gods.
Ye gods.
That lingerie. Oh, I can't. So good. She looks cute in Sherlock's dressing gown, if we're real.
Yes, that is true. I love it when those first set pictures came out and everyone was freaking out.
Oh, that totally. She
was in Sherlock dressing gown. Oh, it was funny.
How dare they? Oh, okay. I guess it's okay.
It's okay. It's fine.
You can still get Sherlock's dressing gowns, I believe, according to Sherlockology and Wear Sherlock. A couple of them, the tartan one is out. That is discontinued. But they're all by Derek Rose, I think, and you can get the blue one, if I'm not out of my mind, and the maroon one, but the tartan one, I think, is discontinued.
So, I always love how all the Holmeses have a wide variety of dressing gowns.
They do, and I tweeted about this when I did the Masterpiece PBS mod thing, which the Baker Street Babes are also mods for.
Huzzah!
I love the shout-out in Game of Shadows, where Watson's wife has knitted him this sort of fugly scarf, but
it's not fugly, it's beautiful!
But it's all the, exactly, it's all the colors. It's all the colors of the, dressing gowns Holmes had in canon, and those are the official colors of the Baker Street Irregulars, and they are sort of questionable. but it's such a cute nod, I thought, in Game of Shadows. Just a little Warner Brothers, you know, shout out there. But yeah, the dressing gowns are always grounds for excellent speculation.
Yeah, so Lara was very, very delightful. Currently in rehearsals now in New York City.
She's doing Uncle Vanya, yeah.
Yeah, it transferred to Broadway.
Good for her.
Yeah, I didn't get to see it, except I have to admit I'm not a huge Chekhov fan. But I hear it's fantastic. Her and Roger Allam is in as well, and I love Roger Allam, the pieces.
That's going to be awesome. Chekhov, the thing is that you become either a Chekhov fan or not, depending on probably the first one you see, because there's nothing worse than bad Chekhov. And there's nothing better than good Chekhov. So, whatever happened, it's not your fault.
Okay. I saw, like, one of the previews of the Cherry Orchard at the National with Zoe Wanamaker.
Okay.
And, like, I just didn't care. I'm like, I don't care about your problems with your goddamn Cherry Orchard. You're annoying me. And,
problems are less visceral than they could be. I like Chekhov very much. I did some Chekhov in college, but it's kind of navel-gazing.
Nice.
I have no doubt that Lara will be fantastic in Uncle Vanya, which is, you know, one of the more visceral Chekhovs, to my mind. There's really a lot of emotions getting thrown around in there.
Emotions.
It's a lot of feeling.
Well, that's good, because when I saw there weren't that many emotions.
I gotcha. Yeah. No, I'm sure she'll ensure that they're invested emotional. She's brilliant at that. In fact, the fact that she was doing True Blood at the time that she first became aware of Sherlock and sent in the audition recording is interesting to me, because they've all, at this point, played sort of supernatural characters. Martin Freeman, obviously, is doing The Hobbit at the moment. Lara Pulver played a goblin, I think it was.
Oh, she was Fairy Godmother, I think.
Yeah, Fairy Godmother in True Blood. And, there's all sorts of supernatural overtones going on with these folk. Cumberbatch playing Khan, obviously, in Star Trek. I mean, there's like...
Or is it? Probably.
Yeah, maybe we shouldn't say that.
I mean, because there's, like, all the news is out there and everyone's saying con. But watch, I don't know, I'm not invested enough in the Star Trek past to, like, really care who he's playing. I love the movie. I was excited for the sequel, and I'm super excited that he's going to be in it.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. If I had ever seen Star Trek, or if I had grown up watching it as a child and had watched every episode of Star Trek Next Generation, then I would be able to tell you... that Khan is a very important figure, and that Khan is one of the classic villains of the Trek universe. If I had ever seen Star Trek, but only geeky people have seen Star Trek, I probably haven't seen a lot of Star Trek. So
not you.
No.
That's unfortunate. You could have given me some information.
Sure, I could have told you that there's this crazy ass scene where Khan puts this worm into Chekhov's ear, which is insane in Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. But I don't know about so I can't talk about it.
Nope. Sorry, listeners, that was just a bunch of worthless information about it. We had no idea. She has no idea what she's talking about. She's not a geek.
No, I mean, it's not like I speculated when I was first trying to speculate as to what species Benedict Cumberbatch was. I didn't speculate he was a Romulan, because I don't know what those are. I didn't think maybe it'd be cool if he was a Q, because that would be crazy, and then he could just sort of control the world and have everything at his fingertips. I don't know what those words mean. So, irrelevant rambling.
Oh, Jesus. So thank you. Yeah, Laura Pulver. Awesome. Yeah. So if you're in New York, go see Uncle Vanya. Laura Pulver. Not sure when it's going to be on stage. Sometime soon.
I haven't seen notices for it yet, but she's been tweeting a lot. If you want to follow her on Twitter, she has been posting pictures and just updates about New York and what she's doing and friends of hers that are on Broadway. I think it's just at Laura Pulver. And she's delightful.
She is quite delightful. You shall enjoy this little interview. We talk fashion, feminism, and how to beat Benedict Cumberbatch at a word game. It's not easy.
There's a trick to it.
There's a trick. But if you ever find yourself in that position, now you know how.
Right? Inside track.
Inside information here. So watch Sherlock on PBS if you're in America. If you're somewhere else, if it's airing at the moment, watch it. If you've already seen it, watch it again.
Buy the DVD.
Yes.
Watch it with the commentary. Watch
commentary is hysterical. I wish I could have told her how funny her commentary was.
It's not available in my region yet, but I look forward to it like a crazy person. So pre-order that stuff from the internets, if you choose to use the internets. And they're all such charming people who shoot this series. I love the commentary that they generally do on the DVD tracks. So, yeah, pick that up and enjoy yourself. PBS is streaming the episode currently. They might bump it when they start streaming Hounds. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. But get to it.
Chop, chop. And now for some Laura Pulver.
Hello.
Good morning, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I wasn't sure, where are you guys?
We're all over. I'm in London, but the other girls are in New York, actually.
Me too!
Yeah. New York party. Everyone's here now, hopefully.
Oh, brilliant. We're having a party in New York.
Hello. Yeah, so Laura and I were just saying that there's a New York party going on here.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a beautiful morning in New York.
It's gorgeous. I just looked out my window.
Really pretty.
So I guess maybe we can run through the Big Issue Babes questions really quickly, and then we're just going to talk to you about Irene and Sherlock and being a badass woman. That's okay.
That sounds okay for a morning's work.
Yeah, there you go. So basically, everyone that's on the show becomes an honorary Baker Street Babe, and you have to answer these questions. Not too hard.
Okay. No pressure.
No. And you can go off on tangents and everything, it's fine. Don't worry.
Yeah, no right answer.
So
you're going to regret saying that.
Seriously, how did you hear about Sherlock Holmes? Like, did you grow up with it, or was it really Sherlock that sort of brought you into the whole canon and everything?
I remember studying a bit of Conan Doyle very briefly in English in high school, and then this specific adaptation of Sherlock, I saw the first series when I was in Los Angeles filming True Blood, and I was like flicking through the channels, and I hopped onto PBS and just sat down with a cup of tea and started watching it, and was totally glued and fixated to the television and remember turning around to my partner at the time at the end, just going, oh my goodness, that was brilliant. It was classy and witty and just was the best piece of television I've seen in a long time.
I feel like it's like all of our stories right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you sort of tuned into it, like, were you immediately drawn to just the stories or to the characters, or was it just all in like one big...
In regards to the show, you mean?
Yeah.
I think Benedict and Martin have created like this dynamic duo that will go down in history. I think they bounced so well off each other. So that was so much fun to watch. And then on top of that, Paul McGuigan's vision, his cinematography, it's so stylish and classy and interesting. And then you then throw people like Stephen Moffat's writing into the mix, and you've just got like the most delicious cake, it feels.
Kind of a perfect spread, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just when you just get people working at the top of their game, or they've been given opportunities to work at the top of their game or to really show what they can do, and everyone has flown with it. That's how it felt.
So would you say that, because have you seen any of the other adaptations, like the Jeremy Brett or the Robert Downey Jr. film, or is it just Sherlock that you've seen?
I've only seen Sherlock of late. Yeah, I haven't seen the Guy Ritchie movies.
So your Irene was basically from the text and what Stephen gave you, and it wasn't from anything else? You didn't take any inspiration from anything else?
Not visually. I did my own research on who she was and her background, and then a part of you then has to let all that stuff filter through and then let it go, because obviously what you've got to be true to is what Stephen's written on the page.
Right.
And fortunately, he's such a great writer that you're not having to get huge lumps of polyfiller out to make it work or sustain. You know, it's there.
I think that the adaptation of Irene in the BBC series is amazing because originally she's an adventuress, and that ethos comes through. It works brilliantly.
Yeah, it's very different to make her a dominatrix. But I think there was also something where they really wanted to test putting Benedict Sherlock up against love and sex. I think they really wanted to see what that would culminate.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that can sort of go into like one of questions that one of our friends Mazarin had. The character of Irene Adler has sort of been like admired and reviled in turn over the history of the Sherlock Holmes fandom. And she's been interpreted and reinterpreted for like over 100 years. What was the most important thing that you wanted to get across about her character when it was your turn to play her?
There was two things for me based on what Stephen had written. I think there was the mischief and the game aspect and the match between the two of them psychologically that really intrigued me, because I think in 2012 we get very caught up in the physical aspect of things. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, did you get to third base with someone? You know, all the stuff that actually it was really interesting to strip. To know that wasn't going to work. And the other aspect I was really intrigued with is allowing her to have some vulnerability, allowing her to be, just even if you saw it for a glimmer, just to see that mask slip.
I think that's important, because she's obviously a very strong woman, but every person has their weaknesses and their vulnerabilities, and I think that makes it more human, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I think we all know that when people wear such strong masks, there's a lot of fear normally bubbling underneath that surface to make that mask so strong and foolproof. And I think just to have that moment at the show where her heart has literally been cracked open, I think it was really important for you to go, ah, okay. Now, like you say, it humanizes her and makes her, I think, a lot more accessible.
She's beautifully vulnerable, I think, in this show. And I was curious, just wondering, in the first episode of season one, there's a line from Sherlock to John in which he says that the tricky thing about genius is that it needs an audience. And I was curious to know if, since Irene and Sherlock mirror each other so perfectly, and that's so beautifully written in series two, do you think that Irene is a slightly more lonely figure than Sherlock, ultimately, since she seems not to have that person in her life, at least as far as the episode goes. She seems not to have a John Watson to sort of be not only the sounding board, but the person who is the dissenting vote and is watching her be amazing.
I think she has a confidant in Kate and a kind of a soulmate in Kate, but I think she operates on such a level that she's never really, like, impressing people bores her, in a sense, I think. The act of being a dominatrix and playing those games with people, I think in the same way it bores Sherlock when people are not of their intellect. I think that aspect bores her, so I think she finds, for the first time, her audience in Sherlock, weirdly.
Good question.
Yeah, that's an interesting part, yeah.
Great question.
Okay, now I wanted to know if you are, or if you were very nervous in joining a show that had been so, you know, hugely popular, and as you said, I mean, impressed everyone and up the standard for television. Were you nervous to join, or were you just really excited to be part of that?
I'm sure I was nervous, but what I recall most is walking into the first day of rehearsal when we did a table read of the episode. And there was something chemically going on where this show had just obviously been praised and won BAFTAs and nominated for Emmys. And there was just this quiet confidence and a huge playfulness in that room of people just having the best time doing things that they loved. And so it felt very freeing and I felt very safe, actually, rather than, it wasn't like I'd put the entire show on a pedestal that I felt like I couldn't reach. It was more, oh my God, this is a really safe environment for me to take some risks and maybe fail and maybe succeed, but it felt like a really safe place to play. And you don't get that often. You don't often get the time in shooting television to do that. And you don't often get, you know, that security. And I think that comes from the top, where Sue Virtue and Beryl Virtue are just incredibly generous and good human beings. And and that filters down in the people they choose to work with and the people they choose to cast. And, you know, they're very, very caring, and they are very hands-on, and it's their baby in that sense, but they're not suffocating it by trying to control, or at least it doesn't feel like that when you're working with them. I'm sure they are pulling, I'm sure they're puppeteers, probably, but it never felt like that they were trying to control or suffocate any aspect of the show.
Oh, they were actually, a good they were producer.
Actually yeah, they were actually opening the doors to creativity.
Oh, fabulous.
Did that make it easier for you to play Irene's vulnerability? I guess specifically I'm asking about the scene where you appear in front of Sherlock for the first time.
In the battle.
It definitely made it easier, and it also made it easier because Paul was very honest with me. The director was very honest. You know, he said, you can wear these nipple covers and you can wear all this stuff. And he said, that's absolutely fine. But he said, I'm telling you now, we're going to be shooting this for hours, because if we literally are a millimetre off the mark, we're going to see that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, it's absolutely up to you. He wasn't putting any pressure on me to do either or. But he said, if you take it all off, there is nothing we can use. We have to discard the material. There's nothing we can use because of the rights from the BBC that will expose you in any way. So, again, it felt like a very safe space. And both Benedict and Martin, you know, Benedict had just been naked on stage in Frankenstein. So he knew what I was going through and was very sympathetic and encouraging. And it gets to that point where you go, you know what? We're all naked, actually. We're all, you know, in our essence, this is what we are. And I guess it was brave, but because it was necessary for the character, I didn't bat an eyelid. If it was just naked nudity for nudity's sake, I wouldn't have been doing the job.
Yeah, but it gave the character such power to not wear and still not be, you know, vulnerable.
Yeah.
apart from that being an amazing scene, and apart from you looking amazing in it, and that having been fantastically brave, did you geek out about the clothes at all? I mean, there's a point at which you're wearing Alexander McQueen and Louboutins at the same time, and I...
I know.
Costuming is just amazing. I mean, are you thinking of putting anything in your future contracts like Sarah Jessica Parker has for I get to keep the clothes when I wear them?
Well, it's one of those things because the Alexander McQueen dress was completely tailored for my figure. So I was like, how can I not want that? So therefore, I bought it. But I'm like, when on earth am I ever going to get away with wearing this? Because it's blatantly Irene Adler's dress from Sherlock. There'll be an occasion, I'm sure, like a lovely afternoon tea or something that hopefully I can get away with wearing it because it is beautiful. And if the project's right, I would work with Sarah Arthur again in a heartbeat because I think she is brilliant and detailed and so not predictable. You know, we had many discussions about Irene Adler's wardrobe and we both came down to that whole, yes, we're not doing the whole PVC thigh-high booty type idea. It's there's something about her being really highbrow and really classy. Yeah. And we both felt that femininity of like lace and the green kimono and stuff.
Oh, the peignoir is amazing. It's amazing. It's just the most fabulous wardrobe I've ever seen. So I am really gratified to know that you have that Alexander McQueen white dress. That just makes me personally
happy. She deserves every bit of credit that she gets because she's very extraordinary.
I have to ask, are there any moments on set that were like really fun? Like, what was your favorite scene to shoot? Because I know at one point, I think you tweeted you were playing some sort of game on a night shoot with Benedict and Martin.
Oh God, what were we doing? Oh yes, we were playing. There's this stupid TV show on UK television when I was growing up called Mallet's Mallet, and it had been after we'd shot that famous nude scene, and so I think the adrenaline was completely buzzing, and we were trying to like push through to like 2, 3 in the morning. I can't remember what time we were at. And so for some reason I had a plastic empty water bottle in my hand and we were just doing word association games. And never play a word association game with Benedict Cumberbatch. Because the man is the living Oxford Dictionary. However, get him at 2 in the morning and needing a sugar fix and you can beat him.
All right, everyone, take note.
Ever find yourself in a word game with Benedict Cumberbatch?
Yeah.
There was a lot of controversy about the ending of the episode and whether Irene being rescued, I'm doing air quotes at the moment, is making her seem like a weak character, like she needed a man to save her. And there's like, because I know after it aired here in the UK, like blogs went crazy about it and like into the two camps, like, no, she's not weak. She was ready to die. But Sherlock came to her, she didn't ask for it, and then there's others saying that, oh, she's a weak character, Moffat has written her as this great woman, and then she needs to be rescued by a man, blah, 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 blah. So I wonder,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was severe. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know how on earth anyone can interpret Irene Adler as a weak character when she risks everything, and she's that kind of brave and authentic in a sense. I never felt like she needed to be rescued by Sherlock. I think it was more a testament to the effect that she'd had on him that he risked everything to go and save her.
Yes.
I think that says more. I think it says more about his character and the journey he went on from meeting her than what it says about her, because actually she was saying goodbye, Sherlock Holmes, and she was sitting there ready to die. It was the end of the road for her. And I think it says a lot more about what he was willing to risk than her strength or her weakness, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
You just articulated exactly what I said way.
Oh, really?
So happy.
Seriously, if sentiment is what the losing side looks like, then what are you doing infiltrating a terror cell?
and I think also that's then underlined by when he says at the end, the woman,
Yeah.
It's lovely. Yeah.
That's the effect that she has had on him. Oh, yeah, I think it definitely says more about him than what it does about her.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, brilliant. And I guess sort of they can jump off that as well. I'm doing great segues. What do you think Irene's doing now that she's, you know, sort of living under the radar, like what she's bumming around doing at the moment?
Oh, she'll have something brewing, I have no doubt. Who knows? I've seen the final episode of season two,
mm-hmm.
and there's just so much to play with, and you know, I'm not quite sure which Conan Doyle stories the gents are going to interpret next in season three. I know there's been a few ideas thrown around, but whether she returns or not, for once I don't mind either way, because I think either it will be that one episode that was really strong and meant a lot, or they will manipulate it and do something very unexpected. And I completely trust Mark and Steven's integrity of what they'll do with the character.
Yeah. I kind of fancy the idea that since Sherlock now has to be going around trying to clear his name, that he and Irene have sort of partnered up, living under the radar, just trying to... I think it'd be fun. Little side quests.
For sure.
Very interesting. I'm sure she's morphed herself into another persona. She's a chameleon in that way, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll just like walk through the background at one point. Show up in a cafe.
I have a question, if you don't mind, from one of our friends, Kristen. Because obviously Irene is gay in Arabia. And like, did you view her as sort of an icon of like feminist sexual agency and empowerment, or like what was she like, a good representative of the LGBT community?
It's so weird because I didn't like to label her. Yes, she says yes, I'm gay.
Mm-hmm.
But what's she actually saying? That I meet people and I fall in love with them and they happen to be of the same sex? It's just I don't know. I've just literally seen the interview with Barack Obama backing gay marriage. I feel like, come on, we're in 2012. What's the big deal? You know, people fall in love, and I think more harm is done from suppressing your true identity than what it is being given the freedom to just be. So I never felt I was hugely flying the flag for gay rights or trying to be this iconic gay figure in any way, because what's being gay? It's just a label, isn't it? Because at the end of the day, I think she had feelings for Sherlock, which then people would say, well, then she's obviously not gay, she must be bisexual. And it's like, actually, let's not label this. Let's just know that human beings fall for other human beings. I don't know. Yeah. I think I'm a bit of an anti-labelist, if there's such a phrase.
That was very, very well played, I think, in the series, in the fact that that Irene, as written, was against self-identifying as someone who was completely committed to one sexuality or another. It was not only well written but really well played, so cheers to that.
And I mean it becomes pretty obvious in the Battersea Station scene, right, with Martin Freeman, where it's the exact thing, right? Everybody's kind of confused, but it's not a problem, it's not the issue. The issue is that everybody cares about Sherlock in a sense. And so that is the issue to focus on, and not what exactly those feelings are, right?
I found that scene the most riveting, honestly, because, I mean, not that your scenes with Benedict aren't amazing, because they are, but it's riveting to watch a more callow screenwriter would not have written the scene where Irene and John have a conversation.
Yeah.
And Irene and John having a conversation that is a really raw conversation is just so fascinating to watch. I mean, how was that?
Because what they have in common is their complete infatuation with Sherlock Holmes, and it just kind of, I felt it just completely connected that kind of trio. Hence why, therefore, John then suggests the idea of Hamish. As well. I just love it. I just think it's wonderful.
Yeah, I do.
let's all just be in awe of Stephen Moffat for that.
Yes.
Yeah. Fantastic. Absolutely.
I think that is my favorite scene, the scene between Irene and John. Because just watching it was beautiful. Like, you're both beautiful, like, subtly acting opposite one another. It was gorgeous.
Thank you. Yeah, and he means so much to both characters. It's just, it's remarkably written and remarkably played.
Well, I have to say that Martin is brilliant at just giving you every color of the rainbow in different takes. You know, he just throws it around, and it was a huge acting lesson for me to watch him work.
Now I have to ask, who are you reading for the supporting actor BAFTA? Martin.
Oh gosh, well Martin won it last year, so a part of me goes, maybe we should be just, can't they do just Sherlock, men are the best, and give them both? I will all be thrilled for either one of them. I will be there rooting for both of them on the 27th of May, that's for sure.
Are you going to the BAFTAs?
I hope so, yeah, for sure.
Hi.
We've got Spook Series 10 nominated for Best Drama Series.
That's right, yeah.
And obviously Sherlock for the YouTube Awards, which I it's slightly controversial that there's been no kind of miniseries nomination when, biasedly, I think it's the best piece of British television.
Hands down.
Hey, there's politics going on, obviously, and
yeah,
that's fine.
We're not going to open that
can. I have to go to work in about 3 minutes. Is there anything else you wanted to round up with?
No, just like good luck. And I know America's completely Sherlocked. Had to throw that pun in there. I had to.
I think we got like 3.5 million on the initial ratings.
Yeah.
Which is really, really incredible.
Yeah, for PBS, that is. It's double the normal audience for PBS. Yeah. So people are paying attention to it.
Yeah,
huge,
incredible. Well, it's so lovely to talk to you all.
Yes, thank you very much.
Bring on season 3.
You can follow all you need to know about the Baker Street Babes at www.bakerstreetbabes.com. Follow us on Twitter at BakerSTBabes, on Tumblr at BakerStreetBabes.tumblr.com, and on Facebook at Facebook.com/TheBakerStreetBabes.
If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you too?